This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off-limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 665. And let's go to the Nerdist Community Corkboard. One of our listeners, who didn't give a name, started a food tour company in Memphis, I'm assuming Tennessee and not Egypt, called Vegan to Veal, which offers food tours, custom itineraries, and corporate consulting to individuals, families, and organizations who want to eat the best local food in Memphis. And I can attest, as a Memphian, there's a lot of good local food. Find out more info at vegantoveal.com. That's T-O, vegantoveal.com. And listener Ashley started a website where she sells her awesome crochet work. Gloves, hats, coasters, dolls, and more. Check it out at raveledstitch.com. R-A-V-E-L-E-D, stitch.com. And Michael Davis just released a free pixel art game that he'd love for people to play. You can find more info and download it at icbm-game.com. If you'd like to have your thing or event listed on the Nerdist Community Corkboard, you can either email us at events@nerdist.com or go to Nerdist.com and comment in the threads, in the podcast thread. Sign up, get your Nerdist username, and comment in the podcast thread, and we will continue to promote stuff that's going on in our community. This episode is my friend and sports writer, blogger, podcaster, Jonah Carey, who writes for Grantland and has a podcast called The Jonah Carey Podcast. He's a very, very good dude, really funny, really cool, that has helped open me up more on my narrow perspectives on sports. I'm not watching sports yet. However, I am starting to understand the psychology of it more and more. And it's just because I'm afraid of it, because I don't fully understand it. That's all. It's just because I'm afraid. But, you know, I'm trying. I know a lot of you guys out there like it, and I'm not judging people for it anymore. Jonah has a book called Up, Up, and Away that is in paperback form now, and it's all about the Montreal Expos, his favorite thing in the world. I mean, outside, you know, family and stuff. But, maybe. Jonah could tell you himself. But Jonah Carey came back. It's been about a year and a half since he's been on, and we were very, very, very happy to have him back. It's a great, very enlightening chat for me. As I try to expand my horizons. But here's Nerds Podcast number 665 with Jonah Carey. The other Jonah.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Talking about his
stupid fantasy league. It's ridiculous.
It is. It's the most. And you're a hardcore sports guy, and you think it's ridiculous. It's. We did it 2 weeks ago. It was pitched to me by my buddy Dave Damashek, who works for NFL.com. It's called the League of Leagues. What is the League of Leagues? So, okay, normal people play fantasy football or fantasy this. It's football, basketball, and baseball in one draft. You sit there for like 12 hours drafting, and I could literally trade like LeBron James for like Clayton Kershaw.
To play what?
Fantasy.
To fantasy. Sports. It's one fantasy league with all three sports in one. It is, even by the standards of sports nerddom, it trumps anything I've ever heard of. People heard about this, they're like, oh, how? What? How could you do this?
And how do you? How is it determined who's has the best team?
So, Well, it's cumulative fantasy point, like anything else, like just a normal fantasy, like the most touchdowns, the most
again,
home
we're
runs.
Talking to Chris Hardwick.
I know, so, I understand
Chris,
that.
Here's what happens in fantasy sports.
I'm not kidding, and I apologize. I'm not kidding when I say I don't know how
Matt,
fantasy
Matt will give you the
I'll
primer.
Bring it into the level that Chris needs it at.
Yeah.
Please.
When you're rolling your fantasy team.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. When you're rolling a character. Yeah.
It's important to take a look at the entire
hit points.
Team. What you're doing is you're taking...
Intelligence, charisma, dexterity, constitution.
That might be a pitcher, right? So you're going to... Each of these traits, you have to pull a fantasy player.
Okay.
So what you're doing is whatever that player then does in real life. So say you take... Pablo Sandoval... from the Red Sox, and you want him as your third baseman. So you take him as your third baseman. Whatever he does in the game that day, if he gets, you know, two hits, walks once, strikeout, you know, that's going to be cumulative. You're going to get those points. So you get a point for the hits, you get a point for the hits, a home run, so on and so forth. So it's whatever they do in real life that happens on your team.
I actually never knew that.
Yeah.
But that's very interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I totally get why you would, because they're basically... The dice rolling is essentially the probability is what they're going to do.
Right.
Like
exactly.
That's the unpredictable nature of that's the game element of it. Okay, I get
that's
it.
That's if it's one sport, it's all the sports together, which a lot of people, especially fantasy football, everybody. Like if you have the most casual interest in football, it's like your wife's sister's cousin. Like everybody plays. But to do it all in one, trust me, when this comes out, like on the comments, people will be like, how do I do this? Whatever.
Do you get to pick, or is there a generator that says you have to have this person? This
no,
person.
No, we draft.
You pick. You draft.
And
you
so,
draft.
Like at the beginning of it, it'll be like the first guy's a basketball guy, then a baseball guy, then a football guy. Then you can trade football for baseball. And then
okay, so if someone else has a player, then you can't have that person too.
No, correct. But I can trade for him, or can, I, yeah. So, things can happen. Yeah,
we have to understand before we get into your crazy league.
We have to get the basics.
You have to talk about how a regular league would work.
Fair.
So, you know, if you're in a league with like 12 people. You have the entire field of MLB rosters. So if you're just doing baseball, there's like, you know, 700 players you can draft because you get the minor leaguers in there too and so on and so forth. So then everybody does the draft. You can do a snake draft. You can do, you know, it's just there's different types of drafts. You can
draft snakes?
You can draft snakes, sure. But what you're dealing with in the whole situation is you don't know if someone is going to get injured for most of the year, if somebody's going to have a terrible year, if someone's going to come back here. You know, you're just taking that chance on all these players, and then you do your
So I guess
your
if you're super
well
nerdy about it, you would do like a deep psychological profile of each person.
Oh yeah,
you have to know if they're going to
know,
go
like,
off the rails.
Oh, they just
divorced.
Went through a divorce,
yeah.
Or they? They okay. Gotcha.
Famously, this guy named Frank Thomas is one of the best baseball players, best hitters of all time, probably. And he had one bad year, pretty much of his whole career, like up until the end. Obviously, when he got old, but during his prime, he had one bad year, and it turned out that it was because he got a divorce. Like it's a real thing. Someone who's
I saw the slugger's wife.
There you go. Somebody who's statsy like me doesn't really notice that stuff, but I mean, it does. It absolutely matters for sure.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's in one that. Is encompassing
like
the
Matt,
three
who's hardcore,
major.
Is like I've never heard.
I
of that.
Can't even.
Katie
fathom
wants
it.
To join. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I do understand the attraction of that because I understand the fantasy element. I obviously really appreciate.
Yep.
But also watching it kind of play out in real life, sort of like a roulette table, basically.
Yeah, a guy breaks his knee or whatever. You're watching. You're like, I guess you feel empathy for the guy, but mostly you're like, oh, that guy effed me. Like, I feel terrible.
Be honest, you don't really feel empathy for that guy. You're just upset that your team.
I'm Canadian, so I feel like 10% empathy.
But you're like,
bit.
Oh, he'll just get free healthcare.
That's a good point. Yeah.
In 2004, I was at a Red Sox game and I was out by the player parking lot and I told Johnny Damon that he was on all three of my fantasy teams. And he said, really? And I was like, yeah. He's like, I'll see what I can do for you. In that game, he hit two home runs.
Wow. Like
wow.
In Seinfeld with Paul O'Neill with the kid.
Yes.
That's amazing.
That is great.
Yeah.
That's a great name, too, for an old Johnny Damon. Here comes Johnny Damon, rounding the bases, coming to home. He's sliding into home, and he is safe.
He's a handsome man.
Yeah, he's a good-looking guy. He's went to go betray us all and join the Yankees, but whatever.
Wow, fantastic. Are you in fantasy leagues, Katie? You're in fantasy football? Just one league?
Completely, yeah. Well, I mean, the past few seasons, yeah.
How'd you do this past season?
I got 8 out of 12.
Ooh.
Ooh.
You got 8 out of 12 what?
Eight out of 12. You got 8 out of 12. What?
I'm not doing this a bit.
I know you're not.
I know people are like, I get it, you don't know sports. I genuinely don't know. I'm asking.
Have you ever been on Scarborough Country?
Yes, but we talked about bowling.
Oh, okay.
I just came from there, by the way. The conversation is totally different in this room than in that room.
I would imagine. It. So you came in 8 out of 12.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten first place in the past years, but this year was hard because we have 12 teams and we did a 2-quarterback league. So each team could have 2 quarterbacks, and there's not that many good quarterbacks. And so I ended up with Colin Kaepernick and Andy Dalton, who hurt. Just awful. No offense to Colin. He is my quarterback. But
no offense to calling a man awful.
Not good in fantasy. So, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, my dad's a fantasy beast. Like, I've never beat him in a baseball league.
Really?
Yeah. He just always making moves at, like, 5 o'clock in the morning. I'll see my dad made a move. I'm like,
that's
what
hardcore.
The fuck are you doing?
So, at LGofLeagues.com. People could check out what the rosters look like and what the rules are and how you could set it up for yourself. And the guy who...
Did someone have to build a whole draft engine?
So he's working... He built kind of a temporary thing, like a Google Docs that basically you can draft each guy and it'll tell you if someone's been drafted. Like, it's pretty good, but this will eventually, probably by the fall, we'll have a full engine. This guy named Toby Mergler will have a full engine. You'll be able to run everything. Right now we're just running it off of ESPN. Eventually you'll be able to do everything at once. LGofLeagues.com. And if you are a fantasy player and you're just in, like, I'm kind of bored by my fantasy football league, I think I want to get divorced now. Like, this is the move.
So I want to include, so, and then also, so if you, I heard you guys are also including, you're also including, basketball and tennis. So go to LGBT.com.
No, basketball's in, but there is a. I did
Thanks
one year. In my,
so that was a quality yes and. I like.
I went on Yahoo one year and started a fantasy golf team.
Oh wow,
that's become a big thing.
I guess ultimately anything in which people are competing, you could create a fantasy.
People
team.
Do it with Oscars all the time now and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, Chris, I think you should not get in on this.
Number one, I don't have time.
Yeah.
And number two, I'm not like. Someday, if I ever retire, that's a thing where I'd be like, okay, now I got time to... But, you know, it's just sort of... I understand how time-consuming it would be.
Yeah.
And I also know that, you know, if I'm going to do something, I really need to do it to the, you know, 100%. Like, I need to be... Because it's one of those things that I wouldn't want to just casually...
Yeah.
I mean, again... I would be starting from scratch, and I also know that I don't really have the passion about the source material to go and do all the research.
Yep.
So to put everything else on hold that I'm doing in my life for this thing that I don't really care about that much would probably be an unwise use of my time. I mean, I'm behind on things that I want to see, you know, games that I want to play, you know. This would be a tough sell. But, you know, maybe someday, I don't know, like I do, the way that you explain it, that nugget was sticky in my brain. Like, I do understand that. Aha, yeah. I see why that's interesting.
In my case, it helps for the knowledge base. It's like, if I know the backup second baseman for the Houston Astros, I write about baseball. That's a good... And despite how much I try to cover the sport, it's hard with all 30 teams. But if you're invested in fantasy, then you know everybody. You know, the third relief pitcher, and then this, and then that.
You could really... Like, you could have, like, fantasy comptroller. Like, there's anything where people are...
It should be like... Are there
fantasy government
leagues?
Yeah, well, they have daily leagues now, which is, like, real gambling that is somehow legal. There's one called FanDuel, there's one called DraftKings, and those are... They actually sponsor a bunch of podcasts and stuff. And
not this one, I assure you.
WTF, no, probably. Not. I mean, yeah, I assume
sure,
so.
Sure.
You set a lineup, and it could be like, I want LeBron, then I want this kind of scrubby guy, but he's cheap, and this isn't. And so every day you can put forth a different lineup with salaries, and you're betting money on it. And you find that the demo tends to be like college kids or 22 or 23 year olds. And I'm just thinking to myself, I couldn't afford a tuna sandwich when I was in college. These kids are going to go broke, and their parents are going to kick them out of the house.
Kids, take that money and put it into a Vanguard index fund.
There you go.
A good mix of bonds and stocks. You want to take the American stock market as well as the international. You get a global market in there. You're going to have fun.
Why are you giving people money advice?
Guys,
I used to write about the stock market. I'm loving this.
Matt spends all his money on old guitars.
Yeah, but
you say that like it's not an investment.
They don't depreciate. That's the thing.
But they're left-handed.
They're more rare.
Really?
They are worth a little more.
But that implies that you're going to one day sell these guitars. If you had a child and the child needed an organ donor, you'd still be like, I'm not selling my you know, there's no way.
You know, the worst thing that could happen, like if Matt's a bad person in life and ends up going to hell, it's not that he'd go to some place of fire and brimstone. It's that he'd be a conscious ghost living in his house watching his guitars get sold at a garage sale for like...
No, $100. I'd end up in a guitar center with no left-handed guitars.
I love it.
Listen all day. I can't play anything.
Dude, Matt Myra fanfic. Make it happen. I want to read it.
No, I've been doing some reading on index funds. It's been great. Anyway.
That was my life. I wrote about the stock market for a decade. I had to do like that. Wasn't my normal skill set, but that's what my job was.
Well, that's essentially like that's also in the realm of fantasy league, because in a way
it is absolutely.
It's all numerical
because you don't. I mean, you are playing for real money, obviously, yeah. But it's like so much of it is theoretical, and you're it's like, well, historically this happened, and so this, and then with these
markets.
I'll
tell you what I've been reading. It's crazy that anybody does actively managed mutual funds. I don't understand why you'd pay those fees for something.
Yeah, the loads can be like 2.5% or whatever.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it adds up.
Vanguard index fund, guess what? 0.08%. Come on.
Of a commission fee?
Well, essentially.
And what's your return annually?
You average over, say, a 10-year period, you'll average around 10 or 11%.
That's really good. It's hard to get consistent results over, like, 6%.
Yeah, but...
You can't buy bonds now. This is really going hardcore.
No, the stock market actually... You know, it's another thing where I have not put a lot of money into the stock market because, again, I don't want to just trust. I don't want to go, here, take this money and do whatever you want. But
Tell
I also
yourself.
Don't want to take the time. I don't have time.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's I read.
But everybody's like that.
Before, you know, years ago, before Jon Stewart humiliated Jim Cramer on television, I read one of his books, and I can't remember. It was one of his earlier books, and... And he basically says, like, if you don't plan on devoting X amount of hours per week, this is not something for you to dabble in. This is real money, and you should be doing this amount of research, this amount of...
Yep.
And I read the whole book, and at the end I was like, well, not going to do that, you know, because I just don't have the
extra
time.
I read a book that was amazing, and it was by a Canadian, The Millionaire Teacher. Have you read that book yet?
No.
It's amazing. It essentially, he lays it out in nine rules. Essentially, what he's all about is low risk, low maintenance. Something that you can deal with 10 minutes a year.
Right.
So, and it's essentially just dealing with, you get an index fund because you're going to get the 500 best stocks, best performing stocks. You're getting all of them. So if it's a down year for the market, it's a down year for the market. But the next, you know,
but it'll come back.
The market is inevitably in an uptrend.
Yeah.
There can be bad situations, yeah. But if you literally just sit there, then it'll eventually go up.
Yeah, and he was also saying that you should. So you don't just put all do your home country's stock market. So you know, if you're American, you do the American stock market, and then you want to not just deal with your own economy. So you take the rest of this money. So you do about 70%. So you do 35% in the American stock market, 35% in a global index fund that takes, you know, you don't have to go for specific, you can choose
the BRIC
specific
nations.
Countries. Yeah. You can go with the, you know, China, India, you know, England
Brazil,
is always got a great, you know, Brazil's growing. And then you take the 30% and you put that into bonds. And the bonds, the reason behind the whole having an investment in bonds is that they are not going to take the hit that the stock market's going to take. So,
but their growth potential is more or less nil.
It's
right
very
now.
Tiny. Yeah. Yeah. Right now, they're not doing anything. But you're not throwing your money away into the stock market where it might dip. Your bond is always going to be worth what your bond is worth, unless you're doing a company bond and then the company goes bankrupt. But again, you're not going
to. Come shot. I just want to remind people of the podcast they were listening to. So far, we spent 20 minutes talking about sports and stocks.
Well,
and now here comes traffic on the ones.
But, so, yeah, you do a Vanguard account, and it's a very...
Because I'm sure a lot of people, you know, a lot of people listening probably feel overwhelmed by the choices, like the places they have to invest their money. I mean, I've always... You know, when
you actually have some now, so there's a dilemma about what to do with it.
Well, because then you kind of wonder, like, what do people do with $100 million? I mean, I'm not saying I'm definitely not at that place, but I mean, like, you know,
Chris Hardwick is not worth. That's what I just heard.
What do people do with $100 million? I mean, obviously, I'm sure I know it gets spread in a series. This is really fascinating. But right before we had Bill Gates on, obviously, I was doing some research on him, and in 2009, he was worth $15 billion. Since 2009, his net worth has gone up to $80 billion.
Oh my god!
Because he has pieces of, like, he owns a chunk of the Four Seasons chain. Like, he just owns.
People invest. Like, PayPal's getting off the ground. Oh, that was a success.
Diversifying. Oh, yeah.
Twitter. Like, you just. They put their seed capital into things, and those things work out, and then it's great. Yeah, if you have money, you tend to make more money.
But I also. But when I was young, a guy gave me a book called The Richest Man in Babylon, which is a book by a man named George S. Clason. It's a very old book told in parable about how to build. Like, it's basically. The main and it's a very short book, but it just sort of teaches saving techniques, because obviously people get money and then they go, I got to pay back everything I owe money on because we spend too much.
Sure.
But this book basically says, like, take a minimum 10% and pay yourself first before you pay anyone else. Mm. And if you're in a situation where you can't do that, then just whatever you can and put it in, you know, put it away. Hide it from yourself. Just put it away. Automate that, and over time, you will. It will. It really does start to amass in a way, because we basically just sort of live hand to mouth,
paycheck to paycheck,
and but it's sort of like I mean I know if I go to for the rare times that I actually gamble in Las Vegas, but when I'm playing blackjack. If I'm winning, I'll just take a few chips and put them in my pocket and forget about them.
I was there 2 weeks ago. I went on this crazy hot streak, and I quit after a short amount of time. I went, like, for me, it was like several hundred dollars, which for me was like, oh my God. And I left, and then I had, like, the three best steak dinners of my life the next 3 nights. And my friends were pissed at me. Why did you do that? And I said, I still feel like I'm 20 years old. $100 to me is so – I can't lose it. It would make me so upset. And that's, by the way, great if you're gambling. That means you're never going to lose a lot.
Right.
And – but then you find a way to cash out as well. So, yeah, I'm totally like that. I will just stick it in my pocket.
I think, you know.
It's like, the Jew in me, let's say.
Set up an ING account.
Yep.
And then just do an automatic transfer with every paycheck, just whatever.
Sure, you could do that, Chris, if you like a low return. But what I'm telling you.
Well, I'm just saying, like, this is just to build a nest egg.
Yeah.
So that you have.
You can retire one day or have kids or whatever.
Or so that if something, something horrible happens, something unforeseen and horrible happens, that you have a little bit of reserve to fall back on. Now, I think you really should forget about this money and just let it build over time. But after 1, 2, 3, 5 years, someone earning a modest wage could end up socking away a couple $100,000 in a very short period
of time. As into guitars and Star Trek as I am, I feel like I am now as into wealth building.
Cool.
I
you and I should chat about this.
So
this
fascinated.
Good.
About
well,
it
just so made what, me think of a name for your show. Guitar Trek.
That's pretty good. The one thing that the American system has is that this whole idea of matching 401ks and stuff, that's kind of genius. Like, I mean, so I work for Disney, which is a gigantic company, and up to 5% of my paycheck, if I put it away, they'll match it.
Right.
Even if your stocks or whatever it is that you, a mutual fund you own, isn't much, you're getting free money from someone. So if you work for a big company, my advice to you is, I understand it's very hard to save money, but you'll never see it. It doesn't arrive to your house. The paycheck gets farmed, the 5% gets farmed out somewhere else. Do that. That's like the number one piece of advice.
Let's just assume that most people, there are small little things that they're not doing right now, just one or two easy steps that they could be doing to at least somewhat improve their situation for the long term. But I know it's obviously very hard because, you know, we want to survive and survival mode forces us to think short term. And so some people aren't necessarily in the situation where they can.
It depends on age. Everybody's broken their 20s.
But I also remember that when I was in college.
Yeah.
As broke as I was, I always found money for beer. I don't know how. It's like you always find money for the, like, even Matt, when you're at your brokest, you're still like, oh, well, true. I'm going to get this guitar because I like there's still money hidden. So, you know, one thing I would tell people to do is just, like, you know, get iBank or Quicken or something. Track every dollar. It's not that hard. Like, when you get up in the morning, you know, have it automated so that it automatically downloads and you can just quickly categorize. your money, like your spending, so that A, you know how much you're spending, and B, at the end of the year, all of your transactions are categorized and you don't have to go through
your taxes.
You don't have to go through that for hours. Yeah. It takes literally 3 minutes a day if you were to, like, the first thing you do when you wake up, just automatically categorize your transactions.
Our goal, Dory and I, our goal this year is to have paid for the wedding, have
Jewish wedding?
Half
I was going to say be a half. Jewish,
okay, because if that's happening, ain't no chance you're paying for the wedding.
No, we're grown adults. So, pay for the wedding and have zero credit card debt, and have we want to have at least $25,000 towards a down payment on a house. So that's our goal for the end of the year, and we are on track to make that happen.
That's good. You can do that.
Yeah,
it's easy, but I think for most people it's difficult. Like, you can't start manipulating money until you know what's coming in and where it's going, because you really do, you know, so few people actually pull cash out of their pocket anymore that you don't even, I mean, it is like
plastic
gambling
is
with
so
chips.
Intangible.
I mean, it's how Vegas tricks you into spending so much money, because they're like, oh, these are chips, they don't, they're just this, I mean, it tricks you. It's, you know,
I still have money, cash money from the last time I was in Vegas.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Nice. I crushed it over there.
Nice. What'd you play?
Roulette.
Roulette's a weird game. I never played roulette at all. Then I have a couple buddies who like to play it, and there's a casino. I live in Denver, maybe 40 minutes outside the city, so you just kind of hop in your car and you go over there. And they say, okay, we're playing roulette. I said, okay, roulette. And we sit down, or stand up, I guess. And we start getting, I'm losing a couple, and I'm like, I put in for 100 or 200, I'm almost done. Yeah. And for some reason, somebody else joined, so I had to switch colors of chips. They said, oh, can you give us these chips, and we're going to give you other chips? And they gave me peach color chips. I hit my number 4 times in a row after that.
Whoa.
I put, you know, I scattered over 3 or 4 numbers, but still. And so my buddies, to this day, those two buddies call me Peaches. They're like, Peaches, how's it going, man?
That's how nicknames are born.
Because that pays like 36-1 or something
it
crazy.
It does. Yeah, so even if I'm splashing chips around, it might pay 9-1 because it's, you know, 1 of 4.
My mom always says, you know, my mom, she was like, when you go to roulette, when you go to Vegas, play these 6 numbers, and they're basically like one number from each of the 6 pie pieces on the wheel, so that the probability is that, you know, there's a higher probability that one of those 6 numbers will come up.
Well, here's the thing you got to realize in roulette. Each spin is an individual event. It's its own thing, so you can't sort of spread it like that. But
no, when black comes up 4 times, red's going to come up the 5th time. I know it. That's why I'm going to put all my money
on red.
There's
literally something called the gambler's fallacy. That is exactly what that is.
Back to my more of my readings. Reading Casino Royale. I believe I've told you this, but I don't think I've said it on the podcast. James Bond, Ian Fleming lays out James Bond's roulette gambling strategy in like the 2nd chapter, where he just discusses how he's up like 5 million francs, and here's what he does. So what James Bond does, and again, this is European roulette, so there's 1-0, not 2 zeros. But what James Bond does is he takes half of his money, and he splits it up between the first 12 numbers and the last 12 numbers. That way, they pay 3-1. Mm-hmm. If you hit either of those, they pay 3-1. So your losses.
So there's like a 2/3 chance that you're
going to hit. Yeah, there's a you know, relative 2/3 chance that you're going to hit it. And then what he does, is, which is something I also do, which is he sits out spins. Like, he just sits and watches the board.
Hmm.
And then if he's doing well, he then decides to just
while getting blown by a secret agent.
Just for a spin, he'll throw it on even.
It's kind of a wussy move for James Bond to be spreading over 12 numbers. Just put it all in number 5 or whatever. James Bond wouldn't do that.
Well,
James Bond
would do that. The,
right.
The
fiscally
James,
conservative,
the book
literary
James Bond,
James Bond.
Is Ian Fleming.
In America, he'll put some down on 00 and then some down on 7.
Maybe he would do that.
He might do that.
It'd be a fun thing to do.
Yep.
So I came today with a couple things I actually wanted to just chat with you about. Like, I saw your show in Denver, by the way, which was great. Fun Comfortable was awesome. People should go see it.
Oh, thank you.
It was great.
Thank you.
I brought my wife. She was enchanted by you, and we had a lovely conversation. And I'm a regular listener of the show, and I listened to the Kroll episode recently. There's like 100 Kroll episodes.
Yeah.
But he was talking about the idea of being socially awkward, and you were saying that you feel that you are, and he definitely said that he is. When someone meets you, you come across as bubbly and this and that, but there's a way to be introverted and still do that. And I wouldn't call myself an introvert exactly, but I definitely have those proclivities, and I've kind of come out of it because my career has advanced and all these things. And I'm interested from your perspective, because you do strike me as an actual introvert. You are doing these high-profile things. You're hosting a goddamn TV show. You know, you're on the red carpet or whatever. How do you just kind of turn on the switch? It's like, it's Chris Hardwick time, like magic time, like Jack Lemmon? Or how does that work? Because I still stare
at myself in the mirror.
I still struggle with it a little bit.
It's Chris Hardwick time.
There's a scene in Boogie Nights that is exactly what he does. He stares at his big dick.
Yeah.
And I go, come on.
And then I say to Burt Reynolds, you're not the king of me. I say when we fuck, Jack.
And I lick my lips. I think not all social situations are created equally.
Yep.
So, you know, if it's my show, I'm a little bit more comfortable because it's my... I mean, I'm sure there are control issues, you know. If I'm at a stranger's party and I don't know anyone, then it's just like... And then I just get real gun-shy, you know. But when I'm in environments like... I mean, I've just been hosting shows for so long that it's... I mean, now this is... I've been hosting shows for 21 years. Like, wow. I just have a lot of...
Since the days when people actually valued vaccines.
That's right.
It's been a while. We talked about that last time. I'm still going to bring it back. Doesn't matter.
Vaccinate your kids, please.
Please. Please do.
Please, for the rest of us.
Don't be a dumb.
I have twins who are in kindergarten. And
Twindergarten,
the number one state for measles right now in kindergarten, they just did a survey, is Colorado.
Oh.
Because there's a combination of like really, really like super duper crunchy people, like kind of, you know, holistic. And then there's a lot of liberal. By the way, all these people, I don't have a problem with any of these people. I'm just saying in terms of risk factors for people who don't vaccinate. That's one. Other one is if you're hyper libertarian to the point that like you think the government is trying to get you. And then there's extremely religious people. Again, those are all fine, lovely people.
A lot of extremes.
But it's a lot of extremes, and it all comes together in this soup of a weird state, and my kids are in this, and they've obviously been vaccinated, but it's like, it's just scary as hell.
Yeah, I mean, I really do. Are they going to start mandating now? Are they going to start mandating vaccinations?
What's happening is there's opposing forces. So some states are trying, you know, depending on the legislator, are trying to put forth these religious exemptions to make it less stringent. And what's happening is there's now a pushback against that. Like if the first wave was kind of, we don't want to be vaccinated, here's what we're going to do. Now other people are coming. And by the way, from all political sides, it's not a one thing or the other. And they're saying, no, we need to do this. And so there's a debate about this because anything that is absolutely mandatory in society freaks people out.
Yeah, well, look, listen, you know, I'm sure there's some area in New Mexico that we can fence off for people and go, you know, if you don't want to get vaccinated, that's fine. Go live here with other people who don't.
I got a really like horrible cough a few weeks ago, and I thought it might be whooping cough. And the thing is that there's certain like
whoop 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 whoop.
The MMR is the measles and mumps and rubella, and everybody gets that when they're kids. But there's another one that's tetanus and whooping cough and one other one, and that you're supposed to do every like 5 years. You keep going as an adult, and who the hell does that? Nobody does. If you're going to, I don't know, somewhere abroad or whatever, maybe you'll do it. Or if you step on a nail, you get a tetanus shot, but you won't do it. And it makes you more cognizant of your own health if you have kids. You're like, am I up to date? Do I need to do this thing? I did not have whooping cough in the end. But
that worked out well that you didn't have whooping cough.
It did work out pretty well because I usually, you know,
did you get your booster?
I got my booster. Listen, my horrible Seth Rogen voice, it's very important that it be left intact. So I have to do what I have to do.
I got miner's lung. I got spastic rectum.
Rickets. Scurvy.
All
shingles.
Of it.
But yeah, so you're saying socially awkwardness, it has to do with the context of it and you can get over. I mean, the party thing is an interesting one because I had that for a while. And then what started happening is my career went along because I'm a sports guy and a stocks guy, quite frankly. 99% of dudes at a given party, what do you do? I write for Grantland. Oh, well, let's talk about my fantasy basketball team, or let's talk about this. Or if it's not that, they'd be like, what do you do? I write about the stock market. What should I do with my 401k? Da, 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 da. And so there's automatic entries. Whereas if you go to a party, mind you, if you go to Silver Lake, it's going to be a different demographic to go somewhere else. But they might not all be into whatever, World of Warcraft, or whatever it is that you like specifically. Sports is this galvanizer that just bros like sports. So it's easy. So even if I feel a little uncomfortable at this party, I become somebody that people want to talk to, and then I have an easy entry, and then it's easy.
Yeah, we went. Lydia and I went to dinner the other night with a man who was a famous football player.
No,
and
is he a 49er?
No.
Oh, Katie was excited.
No, he told me.
Okay. OJ?
What?
Was it OJ?
No, it was OJ.
Okay.
Yeah. And we went to a steak dinner, and he was like, if I had done it, and then he showed me on the steak, like, I would have done it. But it was funny, because with this guy, and he was very nice, but I was like, I got to be honest. I mean, I know that you play football, but I don't know anything about sports. And I kind of half expected it to be like, oh. But he was it was actually relieved. He
doesn't
like,
want to talk about it.
Oh, wow. That's great, because usually it's all, you know, like, people are all sportsy, and I am constantly in situations where I don't know how to respond because people just automatically assume things because I'm a guy that yeah. I must know these things, and I don't ever know how to respond, and there's always sort of a disappointment. I'm like, oh yeah, I don't know anything about that stuff. There's always like and then the conversation just like halts. There's never any other like, so what else do you like? It's just like, oh, you didn't know this thing. Door close. So I don't know. I mean, it'd be nice if there was a transitional thing. Well, now I can pretend that I understand something about fantasy sports.
I think so.
But it's just funny.
Did you roll your baseball team?
It's funny how sports just became the one galvanizer that people have rallied around. Like, I mean, I feel like, honestly, if you went to a party and you talked about Star Wars, most people are into that too.
Well, a party that I went would go to, yes.
No, but I think that's pretty. Like, most people
just
like Star Wars.
Yeah, I think the general public now likes Star Wars.
But people don't casually jump into, you know, the origin story of Boba Fett. Like, it's just not how it works. Whereas you could talk about the Lakers in a
second. I understand that the majority of people have seen Star Wars, but I promise you, the majority of people do not talk about Star Wars.
That's what I'm saying.
If you are at a party, yeah. If you're at a party and you talk about, you know, anything beyond, hey, new Star Wars coming out. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Then it's just people. I mean, I've been that guy at a party where I think, oh, I have an open door. I can talk about, you know, I can talk about, well, like, so someone came up to me at speaking of environments that I'm not entirely comfortable in. It was an Oscar party, and these people came up and were like, oh, we, you know, we love Walking Dead.
That's cool.
And I was like, oh, that's really cool. And so I because I was so sort of starved to connect with someone at this event where I didn't really feel like I had much in common with anyone, I immediately was like, oh, are you reading the comics? And I sort of went off on this whole thing about the comics and this character that's in the comics that it seems like they're leading toward in the show, but I'm not 100% sure, but it feels like it. And I just lost them. Like, it was, I thought, oh man, of anyone, I thought that would be, but no.
Well, Game of Thrones is like that, right? Like, I have not read the books, and so I'll be like, oh, Thrones, this, and I'll start in on something, and I think because I'm such an avid fan of the TV show, they'll say something, and I'll go, wait, what? And they'll go, oh, I just assumed that you'd read the books, and they're like, oh, great, now I know that these five people are all going to die or whatever, and yeah, it's just, it's this weird, even if you're hardcore about something, there are levels of, like, for instance, having three fantasy leagues in one fantasy league is more hardcore than, you know, two of your associates who are quite hardcore.
That's why I think that, because a few years ago, people would say, well, you know, is nerd culture in danger of becoming too diluted because there's so many fringe nerds now?
Mm.
And I would always say,
well, Fringe is off of Fox now. I don't think you have to worry about that, Chris.
Ah, well played, wordsmith. But I would always say, it's not in any danger because there are still trenches that only real nerds will go down that are safe. Those are safe depths. Normies cannot breathe. They are not evolved to handle water pressure at that level that those trenches go down. And I still get, you know, and I get accused of, you know, like I see it on Reddit all the time where people are, some guy the other day goes, There was a topic about you know, who's someone that you irrationally hate, and this guy's like, I fucking hate Chris Hardwick. He just tried to get rich off nerd culture, and he there's no reason for Talking Dead to exist other than that he just wanted to get on make a TV show. And I was like, well, that's not how TV works, because I would have a
you
thousand
snap
shows.
Your fingers, yeah.
Yeah, that's not how that works at all.
By the way, are normies people who go to a George Wendt convention? Is that how that works?
Ah, no!
be great.
Now, see, you're referencing Norm and George Wendt, and we just had a screening of Fletch the other night at Cinefamily.
Cool.
For the Wayne Fetterman International Film Festival.
There's certain
international.
That's what it's called. Fletch holds up, by the way.
There's certain movies that are, I feel like everybody's, you know, like The Godfather. There's certain older movies that people have seen, but then there's like pockets of movies from the 80s, early 90s that are so good, and just people haven't seen it that, like the new generation.
I don't always recommend you go back and see your favorite movies from your childhood. Or if you do,
yeah,
don't make the mistake. You should have a pre-screen process. Like, if you haven't seen something for a long time, don't make the mistake of saying to your friends or significant other, you know what movie we gotta watch? Let's watch Short Circuit 2.
Oh, God.
You know what I mean? Like,
no.
You should have a pre-screen before you involve other people, because then you'll be with this, like, I don't know what happened.
Fletch, I think, if I'm remembering right, Fletch was, that started in book form, too, and I did read
it did.
Those. And I like those, and the movies are great, yeah.
Well, the one movie's great.
Yeah, the one movie's great.
Kind of an abomination,
right.
But it's funny, Michael Ritchie directed Fletch, and then the next year, he directed two films. He directed Wildcats and The Golden Child. Or those are the ones that came out.
Man, I remember those movies so well.
Yeah,
I remember the rap in Wildcats. You know, at the end.
Football. You remember that?
It was very melodic. It was well.
You remember that?
Younger than we are.
There was a rap in the closing. Wildcats was Goldie Hawn basically takes over coaching a football team.
Oh, now I remember.
And
that.
At the end, there's like a rap.
Yeah,
and
very all 80s. Golden Child too. Yeah, there's all these. You're right. Some of them don't.
Some of them
Golden
don't.
Golden Child, I think. Is that there's one of those movies that absolutely holds up really well. That might be the one.
There's one. Well, there. Golden Child, I don't think holds up very well. I mean, it's kind of esoteric. It was kind of a weird movie when it came out. Big Trouble in Little China, awesome.
I haven't seen that in a while.
3 o'clock High, one of the best films of the 80s and one of the most underrated films of the 80s.
Mm.
But I think that was Phil Juanu, right? Am I right, Kyle? I think it was Phil Juanu who directed, what did he direct? Rattle and Hum. He's directed a bunch of stuff. I think he directed that Punisher short. That came out a couple years ago with Tom Jane. Yeah, and but it's a movie that a lot of things were derivative of, but without people realizing they were derivative of it. So that's a great movie.
Well, hell, if we're going to go to Chris Hardwick land, Night Shift,
yes.
It still totally
holds up.
Yeah.
What about, what else? What else do you like?
Jeez. Well, my favorite movie of all time is Raiders, but that's such an iconic movie or whatever, but it is from that era. What are the good... See, here's the thing. I've said this before. If I were ever to switch teams, and I don't need, I'm happily married, but if I was ever to go to the other side, it would be for peak Val Kilmer.
Peak Val Kilmer.
Wait, Top Secret.
Real Genius Val Kilmer, Top Secret Val Kilmer, or Top Gun Val Kilmer?
Yes, all those things. And there's a movie called The Salt and Sea, which came out in the 90s. Have you seen that? They're nodding. You haven't? Okay, nobody's seen this movie. It's amazing. It's about the meth trade around the Salton Sea, a part of California, very desolate and whatever. And Vincent D'Onofrio plays this whacked out guy, and it is what it's. I like film noir and stuff. Amazing. They're nodding their heads off. It's so freaking.
But there
good.
Was a before Fletch the other night. Cinefamily showed a preview for this documentary all about the making of the Island of Dr. Moreau, and it looks amazing. Just about how many, it's like all these people going like, Brando was fucking crazy. Like, he's the one that spotted the small version of himself that they have in the movie.
Oh, really? Like, Sunset or whatever?
No, he was on like a talent show or something.
And, yeah.
And so Brando was almost like, dress him up like me. And like all this sort of weird mini-me stuff. And but one of the producers said something, and people are like dishing about the movie. One of the producers was like, Val Kilmer is such a prick. If I were making a movie called The Life of Val Kilmer, I wouldn't work with him. It was like,
that's amazing.
So I think Val is a little strange.
He was and is. There's a great article. Actually, this guy's now my colleague, Chuck Klosterman, and he wrote a piece about Val Kilmer from a few years ago for like Esquire or something. Just Google Chuck Klosterman, Val Kilmer, and it's so interesting because you get a window. He did become really weird, and it talks about it, but it also humanizes him. I mean, the thing is, this is a whole other debate, but I just consume the art. Like, I grew up in an era where I just liked Guns N' Roses.
Right.
Axl's not a good guy at all. at all. And I was a pretty socially conscious teenager for a teenager. But I would struggle with it because I'd be like, appetite rules, like user illusion rules. What am I going to do with this
stuff? But in the 80s, you didn't know that.
You fucking rioted.
I was at the Montreal Riot. That was the famous concert. This concert was Faith No More, Metallica, and Guns N' Roses. I was like 17 or 18, and I was a counselor at summer camp. I had to get a special dispensation day off to go to this concert. I had a friend who had like his grandfather was vice president of Ticketmaster. We had like first row tickets. Slash is playing right next to us. We miss Faith No More because we didn't care. We go see Metallica. 45 minutes into the show, they have pyrotechnics. James Hetfield's hair lights on fire. They're gone. That's the end of the Metallica show. Now people are getting antsy, and Montreal is like a very high energy, like flashpoint kind of place. 2 hours and 15 minutes we wait for Guns N' Roses. This is in a stadium. It's the Olympic Stadium where my team, the Montreal Expos, played. 70,000 people there. Women are flashing the scoreboard. People are like starting fights. Like it's getting crazy. Guns N' Roses comes on. The first song, you know, should be like Welcome to the Jungle. They do some like fourth-rate song, whatever. And Axl's sitting. He's not even standing. He's sitting on the stage like this. Does a couple more songs. Very lackluster. They all leave except Slash. Slash does a guitar solo. Awesome. For about a minute. He leaves. That's it. That's the end of the show. Giant riot. Break down the stadium. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
They did like four songs?
Total. And it was and it was just such a big deal, this concert. This was one of those like super concerts of the era. And man, oh man, we were so pissed.
Is that the one where James Hetfield had his whole arm got burned? And he couldn't play guitar, and they had Metallica kept going, and his guitar tech knew all the Metallica songs, so Hetfield would just sing, and the guitar tech played Hetfield's parts on guitar.
Now that's a fucking band.
Yeah,
that is a band who will stick it out and be like, "Fuck it."
GNR, no, Metallica, yes,
yeah.
So anyway,
things haven't worked out great for Axl.
No. Which maybe comeuppance, I don't know.
But you know, I...
maybe comeuppance,
karma,
don't know.
I don't know how the universe works.
But in the 80s, because of a lack of means to deep dive and find out,
yeah,
like,
true.
You didn't really know that much about people personally.
Yeah.
So it's, you know,
yeah,
now,
Val Kilmer,
of course,
stuff came out later.
And I heard these crazy stories about Axl, and again, this is alleged, I don't know if they're true, but, you know... Stories like, on one of their songs, you can hear him fucking the drummer's girlfriend in one song.
Yeah, It's So Easy. Or Night Train? Well, it's on Appetite, yeah. There's like, they play a VO of a woman moaning, basically, and it's meant to simulate something, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's a real story or... It's a good legendary story.
Well, all if there was ever a band that was made for all those Behind the Music specials, Jesus, like, Guns N' Roses is like, it's insane.
If you slow down the intro to Sweet Child of Mine, it says Paul is dead.
What? You blew my mind. Yeah. And Slash is such an... Well, we've talked about Slash before, that he's such an interesting guy, and he's introspective and smart, and he seems like a kind man and all these things. And
he's a good dude. We've had him on, and I've talked to him off the show.
And that was the one where you guys were talking about dinosaurs, and it was so interesting, and Axl just does not seem like that guy.
No.
No.
I wanted to do a YouTube video at the Nerdist channel called Slash's Dino Corner, where he would just sit in a big leather chair and dispense facts about dinosaurs and then shred out.
So,
such an amazing.
We were I do a couple of podcasts. I'm promoting my new book called Up, Up and Away, and it's about the Montreal Expos, and it's super cool, and you should pick it up. And even if you don't care about the Expos, it's 35 years of team history. I talked to everybody relevant.
And now it's in paperback.
It's in paperback. It just came out, and it's definitely a lot of fun, blood, sweat, and tears, and it's great. So I was doing the Sklar Brothers podcast, friends of the show,
Scarborough,
obviously. Scarborough County.
County.
Not big time enough for country.
Okay,
but that's all right. And we start talking about something. Speak of dinosaurs, and somehow. We were talking about one thing, like a certain kind of fanfic, and then we went on to dinosaur fanfic, and I started talking about it as if I had some fluency in it, and then it became obvious that like somebody on the internet is going to Photoshop me doing something with a Triceratops, and it's very horrifying when you're on a podcast and you can't take the words back,
right?
And
Triceratops,
they were doing it. So don't say things that you can't take back, kids, because that's bad.
Oh yeah, 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 and also. Never say something and then act like you don't want it to happen.
And also, don't dare your bosses to suspend you, Simmons.
That also happened last time I was here. But the suspension happened in the interim, yeah. I guess. Yeah, yeah.
Is that over?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really everything fine now?
Yeah.
You know, he's
doing all kinds of cool stuff.
I had a conversation with Bill at the Emmys.
Oh, nice.
And he was so nice. And it was just kind of like, we got to do something together sort of a thing. And then our schedules sucked so much that we haven't talked since then. It was in August, but Bill's a super cool guy.
Yes.
And he was very, very kind.
he's a renaissance man. Like, he's into every, you know, it started like as a sport thing, but now like he hosts Oscar shows on ABC.
I've still never met him somehow.
Which, you're a Red Sox guy, yeah. You'd think so. And in LA, people just meet each other. Yeah, no, and the 30 for 30 film series. Like, even if you're not a sports person, if I would recommend these documentaries. Kyle's nodding, too. And Kyle's not a gigantic sports guy. Yeah. Yeah, there's some really great. There's
favorite
one
is still Broke.
Broke is, it's about athletes who make $100 million and they lose all their money.
How do they lose all their money?
They spend like they're always going to be making that amount of money.
And they also have a lot of demand, not all of them, but a lot of them have demands on their time. There's these posses emerge and start to suck them dry. And they just buy a Bentley every month and it adds up. It's crazy. There's another one about Pablo Escobar and soccer.
The two Escobars.
That's still my favorite. I think that might be a 2-hour one.
Great. Yeah.
Unbelievable. You could not give a fig about soccer and you would think, this is unreal, this movie. I mean, this is like on par with whatever your favorite feature film was last year. Like, some of them are so good.
They're all good. They're all
and,
really
you know, him and Connor Schell and a couple other people, Jason basically just said, let's just do this. Let's just, with ESPN's having a 30th anniversary. Now there's like shorts. We just had Errol Morris did a bunch of stuff on Grantland all last week. Errol Morris is the coolest. Yeah, wow. Mad knows. Yeah, he's the coolest. And so it's just, it's Bill and he hired good people. This guy, Dave Jacoby, runs all our film and podcast stuff, is great. And it is so amazing to work with a group of people who are A, brilliant, and B, so aggressive. They're just like, yeah, fuck it. Let's just do it. Let's just make this thing happen. So I'm all into that. I think that the Nerdist Industries and the Grantland universe, there's that same entrepreneurial spirit.
Well, because what I wanted to do probably in 2002 was make a documentary about how most people don't know that there was a time when bowling was like a premier sport, where it was like bowlers were treated the same way that premier athletes are treated now.
Yep.
In the bowling from probably the 40s through the late 60s, early 70s, and then it kind of started going downhill from there for professional bowling. But, you know, like, but my dad lived in a time when he was on tour that it was, he had crazy stories about stuff because of the, because they were so high profile. Yeah. Like bowlers, like bowling was on and people watched it. It'd be kind of cool to highlight a time when, you know, like why and what that was, what were the contributing factors to the downfall. And, you know,
you go to the Grantland people, mm-hmm. You write a one pager, you discuss it with them. You find the right people to make it, there's a pretty good chance they'll make it.
Nice.
Very true.
They will. If you have a good idea, they'll go for it. And there's all kinds of ways that we could do. We have these shorts that are like 12 to 15 minutes. Maybe
there's
it's
a great one on the Arnold Palmer. There's a great
Yeah. It's just how did the Arnold, like, it doesn't have to be this hardcore sports thing. The Arnold Palmer is the simplest. Just he made a drink and we made a thing of it. There was one about this married couple who live in Nantucket. They're probably 70.
Were their dicks so long that
anyway. They were very long dicks and for
Come on, guys.
Nantucket, because why not?
Because I just like the idea that it was a couple and that the wife woman had a really long dick too because they lived in Nantucket.
Correct. And until not that long ago, they were the schedule makers for Major League Baseball. They're just these people, and they control all of baseball.
So they really did have big dicks.
They control more or less, they're like, oh, Milwaukee, you're off to Houston today. And, like, you know, any complaint or positive thing you had to say about it was about that. And it's like 11 minutes, whatever. And so there's all kinds of things. And so it used to be that the 30 for 30 was designed to be just the last 30 years. This is obviously an older topic than that. But by no means is it off limits. I mean, it's absolutely sports. And I think that if you can isolate the one nugget that you want rather than here's a big story about bowling. Maybe it is about your dad. You know, maybe he's the focus point. Maybe it's a specific thing about a specific year. Maybe it's like, this is the story of 1965 when everything went crazy. Whatever. You find that nugget, that's a movie. And I'd watch the hell out of that, mm-hmm. by the way.
It could be 30 for 30. Anything that's happened in the last 30,000 years. So you could just go
again back to the Triceratops fanfic.
That's not 30,000 years. Well, okay. Let's get on the fence here with science. Well,
I mean, according to Ken Ham,
I mean, the next thing you're going to say is you're not vaccinating. Come on.
What I'm saying is that
the dinosaurs were snuffed out
5,700 years ago, according to my Jewish upbringing in the Old Testament. It wasn't
the Torah. It's
Thomas Edison invented the Earth.
There's a disappearance in the fossil record at about 65 million years ago, but it's not important.
But this would be an interesting thing to explore.
Yeah, you should.
You have to find the time for it, obviously. But
God damn it!
But even if it was your...
Maybe the new Apple Watch can carve out extra time in the
I
week.
I'm going to get it.
The gold one?
No.
Are you going to get the sport version or are you going to get the aluminum version?
I don't need the
aluminum. I'm confused by that kind of wearable. Is it literally just a phone on your arm?
No, it's... Well, I mean, to a point it is. Yeah. To a point it is, yes. But just the ease of... I mean, it does all these very cool fitness tracking things that are everyone's wearing those now anyway.
Yeah.
But I think just the ease of being able to look at a clock face and... Underneath the clock face, it says what my next appointment is.
Yeah, you don't have to. Yeah,
you
don't have to bring a Google calendar or whatever.
And just getting a text message and just going like that and looking at the text message is just.
What percentage of people do you think wear watches? I haven't worn a watch in at least 10 years.
You know, I don't know, but I argue it will probably get higher. I think a lot of people. I think the transition. I think Apple waited the right amount of time because they waited for these. All these Fitbits and and you know, the Nike Plus thing and so on and so forth. They waited for all these things to be worn. And I see them all the time on people without watches that just want to track their steps. And I think they waited.
Yeah, I used to have a thing that you clip on your belt or whatever. Yeah,
but they waited for enough people to get used to wearing something on your wrist again to go, here's this thing that does everything.
But that's what they do. They sort of like wait in the weeds to see what is going to pop.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see like what's in their reject bin of like stuff that they were about to launch and then went, ah, never mind, the market can't bear this.
Yeah.
It'd be fun to know what's down there. It'd be fun to know where this mythical TV unit that Steve Jobs was working on when he died, where whatever happened to that.
I had a great dinner conversation yesterday. We were talking about, it was a group of us, and we were talking about making something... making people want something that you didn't think that they wanted. And it could even be a product that exists, but that, you know, it's just not commoditized. And so coffee, like obviously Starbucks is the big one. And then Apple's another one. Dating. Yeah. But then like the Beats by Dre company, everybody had crappy Apple earphones or earbuds that were free. And then, oh, why don't I just sell a $300 pair of headphones? And now everybody has one and they just got $3 billion or whatever.
You know,
how the hell did that happen?
A lot of it is design and branding and story.
And status symbol,
you know, like it's a status symbol. And then when the right adopters have it, then, you know, everyone else wants it too. I mean, like they were great looking headphones, and they had a very simple design and a simple logo, and you know, Dre, oh, Beats, Dre, like great name, like everything about it was just the nice, you know, a nice nexus of like they're just sort of the survival of the fittest, like they were the one, all
the
elements.
The other interesting thing about the new Apple MacBook, no headphone jack.
What?
You have to Bluetooth.
With how?
I don't know.
With your
that.
Sweet Bluetooth Beats headphones.
Oh.
Synergy. Oh, that's a bad
idea. I mean, but
idea.
There's so many Bluetooth headphones right now.
This makes me wonder, though.
They're
not down with that.
No, I'm not down with that either.
I know you're not down with it, but guys, guess what? It's going to happen.
Well, but the problem is you can't always carry a set of cans around. Like, you need, like, I just roll up headphones and put them in my pocket.
Yeah, that's why earbuds are, and they're pretty crappy, but yeah, you can just take them with you. Well, my question is, what's the, like, now it just gets me, what's the next thing? Like, is it, oh, well, obviously mustard now. I could buy it for $14 or whatever. Like, what's going to be the next?
What's the next commodity?
Because all these things are so simple. Like, so simple. I just, obviously, to make an iPhone is tough, but still, the idea,
you know,
is easy.
Apple could make a car at some point.
Yeah.
There's
drivers
of that.
Yeah.
There was a thing on Reddit where there was a driverless Mercedes tooling
around
San Francisco.
If I can come into serious money, and I'm not a car person at all, I want a Tesla more than life itself.
Oh, you do?
They're so odd. And everybody in LA drives one, but in every other city in America, it's not a normal thing. Like, nobody drives a Tesla.
There's so many around here.
I went to the CAA building to have lunch with someone one day.
I'm sure there was seven of them.
Every single car is a Tesla. Yeah. So I guess if everybody has one, it's not a big deal. And I don't want one because it's a status symbol. I just think it's green. It's high technology. Like, we had cars our whole lives, and technology was never deployed. Maybe you'd have the rear camera for parking, but everything leapt ahead of it. Phones, electronics, everything. And suddenly now cars are just now saying, oh, wait, we should totally have tech too.
There's a fun rule that's held pretty steadfast for the last... two or three decades, and that's, if you want to know what's going to be on every car, in 5 years, check out the newest S-Class Mercedes.
Mm. That's interesting.
Because they're always like shoving whatever the fuck they can in a car and doing it well, and then it always takes a few years for that to
Tesla.
But even they've been trumped by Tesla. Tesla's, I mean, it's just so interesting.
But Tesla, they're still shockingly expensive.
Yes, they are.
And
they're not that bad. They're like, isn't 70 the base
for
a base model though? For a base model,
yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, well, it takes a lot longer to charge with the base model. So if you want a faster charger, then that's an upgrade. And but then you have to get the unit that can supercharge the car, which is an upgrade.
Yeah.
And so there's the when you upgrade it to a place, I think, which is to where you'd want it to be, it's, you know, $114,000 or something.
Yeah, I also can't get to Vegas on a charge. That's the problem.
They're close. I think the more advanced charge is like 240 or so. That's not – you're almost there. Yeah, and then the new one is – or that's going to be coming out as an SUV, whatever with SUVs. But it looks beautiful. It has gullwing doors, and it doesn't have the SUV problem because it's obviously an electric motor or whatever, and I have two kids. I can stick them in the back. And
the BMW i8 is kind of an interesting-looking car.
The i8's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's pretty – it might
is
be a car
also,
that
– Is it also electric?
Yeah.
It might be a car that we think is ugly in 10 years, but right now it's super – I was kind of nosing around like, oh, I wonder what that – I wonder what's up with that. But it is a weird driving around town car.
I saw one on Melrose the other day.
Hmm.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah,
objectively.
But the DeLorean doors, which are different.
I dig it.
I like those doors.
Actually, they're not DeLorean. Those actually open up like
those
Matchbox
are like
cars.
That's what Tesla has
like
with the SUV. Yeah,
yeah.
It's the same.
Because I mean, it's just a much better way to go because you don't need 12 inches of clearance on this.
Who didn't have a Lamborghini Countach poster on their wall next to the Samantha Fox poster? I mean, every kid I knew had those two posters.
Next to a guy in riding pants sitting on the hood of a Rolls Royce with holding a martini that says "Poverty sucks." That was the classic 80s poster.
Yeah. That I did not have. Kind of
you didn't
awesome,
have that
though. No.
The Samantha Fox poster.
Samantha Fox.
Come on.
She was the best.
Those are some good boobs. So I just went back to.
I'm trying to remember
what the song was.
I'm trying to remember what the song
I want to have some fun.
But she had a couple.
Yeah, I think that was a big one.
It's very generous of you.
I want to have some fun.
I'm not going to
move my body all night long.
Not joining you, but yes.
Jonah wants to have some fun.
Well, and there was a big rival because Katie Gibson was coming up. Debbie Gibson. And Debbie Gibson had the teeny bopper thing too, but she didn't look like Samantha Fox. And so there was, like, if you liked Debbie Gibson, then you were definitely in one totally different camp. The Samantha Fox people, it was pretty understood what was going on there.
Well, so Samantha Fox definitely played up more of the sexy angle.
Correct.
And not the, I'm an innocent, you know.
And Tiffany was the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tiffany was the, but.
She was kind of halfway in between.
A little bit.
Yeah.
She ended up in Playboy, Tiffany.
She ended up in Playboy,
did
yeah.
She?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know, like 92 or something. I mean, it was like sometime in the 90s.
I feel like it was later than that. Just based on the documentary, I Think We're Alone Now, which everyone should watch on Netflix.
Really? Yeah. I'd watch that.
Oh, watch that. Please watch that.
Is it about the superfan?
Yeah, it's about the weird superfans. Like, they follow four weird superfans of Tiffany around. It's a delight.
Of Tiffany?
Yeah.
But like in 2011 or whatever?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
So they must
there's
be.
There's one in Colorado.
There's one of everything in Colorado.
Apparently. It's an interesting place.
I do like Colorado and I do enjoy Denver, and I could totally see, like, someday I'll just get a ranch in the middle of nowhere in Colorado.
Me too, buddy. Just check out my index fund. I'm getting there.
The net number of people moving to town is like 3,000 a month. It's
wow.
Especially if you're like 28 and single and like you're just starting, you know, kind of getting your career going, like everybody moves there. And it's
oh my God, if I'm playing Denver and Sim City, I'm a very happy mayor right now.
It's nuts. And the
thanks,
weed, that is a good
I just got a thumbs up from Kyle. Oh, my sanitation's good. All my plumbing's, everyone's getting the water they need. Putting the right roads, making sure highways are in the right places. forging deals with neighboring towns.
The legalization thing, and that's what everybody asks. Like, if you come to town,
so,
like, oh,
you know what that means,
far.
Jonah? You know what that means? Alien attack soon
oh, no.
on Denver.
Didn't think about that. Yeah, they have all this kind of industrial space kind of ringing the city, like a lot of cities, and they're all full. They're all just grow houses. There's like, I don't know, they said 5 million square feet of grow just all around the city. And there are people moving there who are entrepreneurs, and you'll meet them at a cocktail party or at a bar or whatever. Like, oh, nice to meet you. I'm Bob. What do you do? Oh, I control a million square feet full of marijuana production. It's like, do you smoke? No. Do you support the – are you in favor? No, not really. It's just like this was an opportunity to make money, and there are a zillion people coming to town to do it. There's other things too. There's other growth industries, and this gives you –
like delivery services.
Like delivery services. But what's funny
is... the Flamin' Hot Cheetos factory is tripled.
Oh, so Peyton Manning, the best business decision of all time, as soon as he signed with the Broncos, which was right when legalization was just about to happen, he opened like a million Papa John's.
Oh. Oh, is that why he's in those weird commercials?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
He owns a lot of them. Yes.
Because I was trying to figure out, like, you watch those Papa John's commercials, and you're like, this was the best read? For the whole day?
Well, they made it like at the Papa John's across the street from my house. You know, it's not very exciting or anything like that. Yeah.
That's right, Peyton Manning. You're hit.
I love that Peyton's not doing a bad job. It's John.
They're all guilty of it.
Wow.
I didn't know that. He opened a bunch of... Oh, my God.
He did. Like, right away, he bought a bunch. And, yeah, it's a really... There's other... Like I said, there are other things going on, but I find this all fascinating, and your priorities change when you get older. If you're 21, you're like, hey, we're going to go bulls and bulls and bulls and bulls. Now it's like, tax revenue for my kids. Kick ass. All right. Public schools are going to benefit. I love
it. Yeah.
Which they have. Like, the money's rolling in because it's taxed and...
Rolling,
yes. Because doobies.
Yeah. Where'd you get that joke? Pot topic? Come on, guys. What's happening? Huh? Where are we going?
Kyle is feverishly scribbling down pot topic. That's definitely happening on the tour. It's for 100% chance.
I'll sell it to Doug.
Sell it to Doug.
So your book is called...
Up, Up, and Away.
Exposé. Exposé.
Several people suggested that I call it exposé. No joke.
And then, you were like, "Fuck you guys."
I don't think I quite said that because I'm Canadian. But
you were like, the original book was called GNR Riot, all about the Montreal Expos.
Very good. Like it.
The four chapters about the riot, I think, were a little much.
Only tangentially involved because it was in the stadium. But other than that, it didn't really have anything to do with the...
Correct.
Montreal Expos.
And not too much. But the thing about... So I'd written a previous book, and even as a non-sports person, you know what Moneyball is. So my first book was called The Extra 2%. It had like shades of... It didn't blow up quite the way Moneyball did, but it did pretty well and whatever. And so this one, because I grew up in Montreal, is very... There's a little bit of autobiographical stuff in there, and that's an interesting thing. Like if you meet a writer... Most writers, if they're nonfiction, well, either way, they just don't inject themselves into the story. Really, you're writing about your topic. You're writing about music, or you're writing about your food, right, or whatever. And you're not getting too much into your own stuff. In this case, my editor said, yeah, do that. Put yourself in there. Talk about your stories with your idiot friends or this thing that you experienced or whatever. There was a weird Forrest Gump moment when they were trying to build a new stadium. It didn't ultimately happen. But the first focus group... for some reason, my buddy got invited. I think he knew like the head of the company or whatever. And he was like, we were young. We were like in our early 20s. And he's not a big baseball fan. He said, you're going to go do it. So I go to the first focus group when they're building a new state, when they're talking about building a new stadium. And there's all these people there, and they're business people in their 40s or whatever. And I'm this young kid or whatever, but I'm the most diehard Montreal Expos fan, which is the most niche thing that there could ever be. Like, really, there were not that many of us. And, we start talking about this, and they give their answers, and I'm kind of being shy at first, and then finally I say, no, we need to do this, and I take over the whole room, and it's like if you were like a focus group for a show, but you had one loudmouth giving all the suggestions for like 45 minutes, and then when they put forward the plan like 6 months later, every single thing that I said was in the plan. So if the stadium had been built, it would have been, oh yeah, the Jonah Concourse with like the special kinds of hot dogs, or the this, or the that. Like they just took all of it. They're like, that's a good idea, that's a good idea. So that like stupid little things like that are there, and it's also repertorial. It's also talking to 150 people and all the players and this stuff. And so it's quirky, and you learn stuff. And even if you're a fan of the Yankees or the Cubs or the Red Sox or whatever, I think that anytime you can go that in-depth on one topic and get so much information and present it in a fun way, it plays. And so that's sort of the running thing with the Expos is it doesn't matter. It makes no difference if you follow the team or care about the team or whatever. It's a lot of fun.
And three chapters on the best poutine place in...
That's a big debate that even I can't answer right now. That's a tough, tough question. Well, this is like the best, like LA is a very underrated burger place.
Yep.
Very underrated. Yep. What is the best burger in L.A.?
Well, I tried to go to Father's Office.
I just went there on Friday night for the first time.
It's great.
Golden State?
We went there and went to the Dime. It was a great night. The Dime is the best.
I went to Father's Office in Culver City.
Very good.
Not very good.
Really?
Fucking dickhead food hipsters.
Oh, you can't substitute anything.
Wasn't a substitute. I'm allergic to onions.
Oh.
And so I said, oh, I just want to not have onions. And just very flatly, no modifications. And I go, yeah, I get it. I'm allergic to onions. I can't eat them. It'll make me sick. No modifications.
Oh,
yeah, no, I understand. I have a food allergy. Well, then you're going to have to get something else. Now, I get it. It's their right to make whatever they want. It's a privately owned business. They don't have to service my needs. But I kind of feel like, just in the interest of being a food hipster, and of course, I'm sure from his point of view, the chef's point of view, well, the consistency has to be a certain and this and this and this, but I'm going to scrape them off anyway. If you know what I mean? Like, why waste it? It's not like I was saying, instead of the arugula, can you put barbecue sauce? Like, I wasn't being a douchebag. I was like, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I cannot eat onions. They will make me sick. And they're right. Like, well, then you can't have a burger. And it was just like, fuck you guys. Like, I don't. You know, like, you're really that... But wait, hang on, Matt. That precious for a place that A, smelled like a bar mat, and B, only has 3.5 stars on Yelp. Like, maybe don't be that fucking precious about it.
They have good
So we went to this place called L.A. Burger on Pico. There's L.A. Burger Bar, which is not where we went, but this place called L.A. Burger, which is a shack.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
fucking amazing.
All those old shacks.
So I'm so glad.
You put like pastrami on it and all these weird
things. So I highly don't recommend Father's Office because it's just a level of food hipsterism. It's like, get fucking over yourselves.
Yes, this is Father's Office. We'd like to be a sponsor of the Nerds Podcast. Oh, wait.
Oh, no. I would say no modifications.
you should try Golden State. It's on Fairfax.
Golden State.
Right across from Canner's.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah,
it's simple. It's just like you go up to the counter. There's like five.
Well, you went on Friday night and you didn't get the special of fish and chips. Come on.
No, I did have fish and chips, but I didn't do that.
Yeah, that's the Friday.
That's
night
right
special.
Next to. That's right next to No Name Bar, which is
yeah,
what
yeah,
Largo
yeah.
used
yeah,
to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also the Dime, which might be my favorite bar in LA.
Dime's very good.
Dime's I love
very
the, good. The Dime is just a small.
I know the Dime.
Unassuming bar.
The Dime was. The Dime was one of the last places I got drunk.
Wow.
Was because I was doing a show at Largo. And the Dime is a couple doors down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I.
Yeah, the burger at. Well, we're talking about you getting drunk and having burgers, but the burger at the tavern right there, Redwood Tavern.
Never been there.
Very good burger. Mm. Pretzel bun.
Now, you're a food guy, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I mean, like, you are a food expert.
Yeah.
Is it wrong, do you think, if you have a food allergy to be like, please, I just can't eat this thing?
Yes.
It is wrong.
I think if you can't eat it, don't. Don't ask for it. Like what I'm saying is if the chef is that particular about everything, then you know what? You can't have that. I'm sorry.
But did you know coming in that they were that particular?
No.
Oh.
I mean, I just assumed like
I get that. But
I mean, like, I would have completely understood if it was like, you know, if I was like, can you switch out the blah? Like, I understand no substitutions.
Right.
But modifications for a food allergy. But, you know, but then again, they have a right to make whatever they want. They have a right to make whatever they want. I just feel like it's sort of...
it's like if you want chocolate and you're allergic to peanuts, don't order a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup and make me pull the peanut butter out.
But pulling the peanut butter out of a peanut butter cup is different than, like, please don't put a thing on there.
I know, but didn't they have other burgers without onions?
No.
No,
they have one burger.
They had no onions?
Nope, they have one burger.
And the burger
has caramelized onions on it. It has a blue cheese, some other type of cheese, and arugula.
Uh-huh.
I mean, but it's just there's
I've
one.
I've never been there.
There's
so,
one burger.
Yeah,
but honestly, and when I went in, it fucking smelled like a bar mat. Like we ended up sitting outside because it smelled gross inside, and so I think I just felt like your place smells like a bar mat, and you have 3.5 stars, and you're this precious about not having onions on because of a food allergy.
How did you like not go to HD Buttercup while you were there?
That's where I was. That HD Buttercup.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Apple Pan's another big one.
Apple Pan's great.
Yeah, and that's been there for freaking ever.
Good luck getting a seat
at Apple Pan though. There's just like that counter.
Yeah, but it's so good.
You go by yourself at the weird time.
When I was in Chicago, we ate at Kuma's Corner, which was fucking amazing. It's basically like a metal. It's like a. Did I talk about this on the show already? It's basically like a metal themed burger bar. CM Punk's the one that turned me onto it, and like all the burgers are named like the Mastodon and like all this.
Oh man!
And it was
one of the best burgers I've ever had in my entire life, Akuma's in Chicago.
This is another thing about the whole branding thing. You couldn't, there was no such thing as a $16 cheeseburger, and now you cannot go to any restaurant where there's not, every restaurant has a $16 cheeseburger.
Oh, I went to Jean George's restaurant in New York, and he has a cheeseburger.
Is that the Minetta Tavern? That's the other one in New York. That's the other. There's two biggies.
But I do think that people, I do think there's a level where it's like, all right, it's a burger. Like sometimes less is more.
Yeah.
Like you don't need.
Well, I didn't know they only had one type of burger.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, they just have one. They have one burger.
Well, fuck off.
That's fair.
Yeah. So I will try Golden State.
Yeah, please do.
Because that sounds amazing.
Let me know. I'll go.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
It's just super relaxed. You just go up to the counter. You order. You sit there. There's no decor. You can't tell. There's. It's like the No Name Bar. There's. I don't even think there's a sign.
There is a tiny sign with the.
Well, Lydia eats like She orders like rare burgers. Like she likes
nice.
Oh, they'll cook it up for
you.
She's
like
a
meat eater.
That's.
I love meat.
Yeah.
I cooked six steaks yesterday.
I went 5 years without eating red
meat. What did you do
with
them?
Just for the week. I said.
Oh, for the week.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I cooked chicken and steak.
I read The Omnivore's Dilemma like 8 years ago, whatever came out. And I read it, and my dad had a quadruple bypass at that time, too.
Oh.
And between the two things, I'm like, I'm done eating. I stopped eating mammals, so no pork, no beef, no whatever, for 5 years. And I'm married to a vegetarian. I have two kids who have never eaten meat. They're 5 years old. They've never eaten meat. Because
well, that's on you.
It's on my wife, but okay. I throw her under the bus. Hi. she's an avid listener. And, and I stopped, and then... Like I went on this trip, we went to Hungary, and my family's from Hungary. I grew up with like heavy Hungarian meat, and it's the best or whatever. And I didn't eat this at this time. I wasn't eating, so I didn't have anything. And then I came back from the trip, and I'm like, what the hell am I doing? Who's benefiting from this thing? And there's this weird push pull. Like ethically, I would be happy to not consume animals, but your body has this. I mean, maybe it's like alcohol and other things. You want it, and therefore you keep eating it. I don't know. This is gonna come up. My kids don't know that I'm a meat eater. They have no idea. Like I have
daddy's dirty little secret.
I have a separate part of the house where like there's a second fridge, and I keep like just chicken or whatever in there. But like they don't know. And that's like a whole conversation. Maybe you guys can advise me on this.
Also, I've got news for you. Your kids are not gonna stay vegetarian. They're gonna be at school, and they're
By the way, is okay.
Chicken tenders going by them, and they're like, oh.
If this happens, I think we're pretty okay with it. But. Not yet. Like, there's real reason when they're little. So there's a real debate about this. So I don't know what's going to... This is the big rubber hits the road thing happening in my household right now.
I look forward to
your follow-up. Maybe for their bar mitzvahs, you serve them...
Steak.
Something. Yeah, like, maybe it's like...
Goulash. Go back to the Hungarian roots.
Yes.
Goulash is pretty good. Yeah. We'll see.
So, Up, Up, and Away, the story of Jonah Carey's descent into meat lust with the Montreal Expos.
I saw meat lust at Coachella last year.
So
fantastic,
good.
Right?
So good.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else do we cover? Don't go to Father's office because I'm mad at them.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And for the four people who know where Culver City is.
Just fucking make another type of burger. Don't be a dick about it. I get no substitutions. Just have options.
Yeah, no, I think it's sort of there's an acceptable level of food hipsterism, and then there's a like, okay, you're being a little precious. But, you know, but as someone who likes things the way that they like them and likes to present things the way, like, as a comedian, I, of course, want to present my ideas exactly the way that I want them presented, so I assume that it's probably the same way with food, and I grant someone the right for that, but... You know, you don't need jokes to survive. You got to eat to survive.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
And then, when does this come out?
Who knows?
Okay, so...
2016 in...
2016.
Jesus Christ.
Is it? Well, I was going to promote a thing that I'm doing at South by Southwest, but that doesn't matter anymore.
We'll do it just in case.
Okay, so the coming weekend, it'll be Saturday, March 14th at the Gingerman Bar in Austin at 8 p.m.
Bye, day.
That's right. Me, Drew McGarry from Deadspin, and this guy Brian Curtis, who I work with at Grantland, are doing this thing, and it has unlimited booze and a party bus, and people talking about sports at South by Southwest. So I don't know why anybody wouldn't go to this. It sounds pretty amazing to me, and frankly, I would go if I wasn't on it.
Well, I can give you three reasons why I wouldn't go, but
that's
just me.
You're literally the Venn diagram is the worst.
It's over there.
I like that you and I are friendly because theoretically, there's no reason that we should be.
But you know what's great is that I'm not so. I think people.
and I blame the sort of
Jew Run Media,
like recommendation.
Yeah, maybe you just like
recommendation engines. Like, we're very spoiled now into thinking that everything should be that we have to agree with everything 100% of the time, and we have to. And I am of the belief of, like, I can have friends who have completely different, you know, belief systems, and I don't have to understand everything that they're into, and we can still connect as human beings. And it doesn't be like, well, fuck that guy because he's into this, or, you know, that person's into sports, or that person, like, it doesn't matter. I mean, those are just superficial qualities about someone's personality, like how people deal with the world. That's who they are, you know. So I think we don't have to automatically, like, well, fuck that guy because they like that. Like, this tribalism, they're such crazy. But the tribalism is so singular now. It's like,
you kind of make a living a little bit off of the tribalism in a way. I mean,
why don't you shut your fucking mouth? Why don't you get out of the tribe? You get out of here now.
But I mean, it's personal growth. It's when you connect with people that aren't exactly the same as you. You are out of your comfort zone. That's good.
It
you
is good.
That's why people travel. It's the same thing.
Because you need to be exposed to things that you don't always understand to broaden your horizons.
Sure.
Because then you stop growing. Like you said, that's when you stop growing. When you stop growing.
You're going to become a huge fantasy sports person, and I'm going to play D&D for the first time. That's what's going to happen. That's what's coming out of this. Yeah.
I have a feeling D&D is simpler than fantasy sports, though, because it's more D&D is much more one-dimensional. Like, there's not, you know, they don't rely on a person to not get divorced. You know? Like, you don't have to worry. You don't have to worry that you know that
the rules are set. The parameters are set.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up with, it's funny, a lot
you're
of my friends growing
by
up,
an owl yeah, you're bear also
your
a bad marriage.
Your mage elf is not going to have a nagging wrist injury that prevents his swing from really popping.
His casting arm.
A lot of my friends growing up, maybe most, were not sports fans, and they played Magic Gathering and all that stuff, and lots of Risk and all these things, and I just was not into any of those things, and we're still good friends to this day, so I don't know how we made it work, quite frankly, but, like, you know, a bunch of us would go on a Friday night, oh yeah, we're going to go to, the, we'd go to, like, harness racing, and then to the bar, and then to the baseball game. Like, it was these very
weird
things.
You know,
it
works is that if you're just Canada. Nice to people and you listen to what they have to say and you try to relate to them, then it's easy. Then it works.
Canada,
yeah. Canada with the harness racing.
Canada.
All right,
we're at the end, Jonah Carey.
Thank you.
It's good to see you. I hope you enjoy your trip to Los Angeles.
I did very. I love this place. I lived here once. I would live here again. My wife, who's from Los Angeles, hates it.
Hmm.
But Denver's kind of, you know, milk and honey over there. There's some stuff happening, opportunity.
Denver's good shit. They got Bojo's. Good. Get some honey on that crust. Anyway.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's I live right near there, by the way. It's
oh, a good place. That was so good.
Good pizza place.
We were in a coma after we ate that fucking... Because we just got a bunch of different stuff and split everything. Oh, the honey with the fucking pizza.
My recommendation next time is maybe you partake in a particular activity beforehand to enhance your experience, and then you can really not.
No,
you,
I would
you
just know. I would just fall asleep in the honey.
Okay,
I would be like, "What have I done?
No regrets. My career is over.
I can't breathe. I'm dying.
I got to tweet and tell everybody about this.
No, Chris. enjoy your green burrito."
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.